You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 014 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show on 740thefan.com and KFGO.com. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunderson with my co-host Brad the White Shadow Jones. You can follow us on Twitter at PintoKFGO. Brad is?
I am at the Bison Guy.
You can get us on Facebook. Friend us there. You can follow the show on iTunes if you want to subscribe to it there. Also, if you go to KFGO.com, a new feature, there's a little drop-down bar when it comes to media. You'll see photos, podcasts, blogs. Click on the blog segment, and you'll see a featured blog right there. We're the second one under the Mike McFeely blog, So Many Opinions, So Little Time. Right under there is the Pinto and White Shadow Show. You can go there, click on it, leave comments, and we'll discuss what you leave. I know we have a comment from the last podcast as well, and I'll pull that up shortly. Before we get to all of that,
yeah,
Brad.
Yeah, Dan, I just want to know how your day was yesterday.
My day was, boy, pretty hectic, I'll say, to say the least. It started out just fine. You wake up and you think, okay, today is a good day. And
did you just go Ice Cube on
there?
Yeah,
I did.
Okay,
I did.
I like that.
And so I'm thinking, okay, we'll get up. I have to work at 11. It's raining outside. That's fine. And I get to my car and I'm ready to go because I know I'm not going to be back home for a while. And I remember, oh, yeah, my phone's upstairs. So I'm taking the car because the way you come out of our apartment, there's a door that kind of leads right onto the street. And I want to take the car and put it right in front of that door because I'm lazy like
sure.
that.
Yeah.
And so I'm coming around the corner trying to get out of the parking lot of our apartment. And in the corners, there's boulders everywhere. I think just so people know where the corners are and they, you know, don't hit those boulders. I take the corner a little sharp and I hear it go boom. I hear my tire hit rock, the boulder, and I'm thinking, you know, no big deal. I've hit corners before. I've hit curbs before when I've taken it too sharp. I'll be okay.
That's not a great thing.
No, it's not, okay. but I'll be okay.
All
you know,
right.
I'm not
sure.
I'm not too worried about it. And get out of my car and I hear, and I'm thinking, no. Come around the corner and the back passenger side tire is leaking. And I look and I'm like, okay. All right, I still need to get to work because I'm running late. It's like 10:45. I need to get to work. I need to get my phone. So I run upstairs. I grab my phone. I come back down, and it's getting lighter. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe it's, you know, maybe we've, whatever. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm in a hurry at this point. And so I start going down the road towards, there's this Holiday gas station that's right by my apartment, and all of a sudden I hear, foom, foom, foom. No.
Also not good.
No.
No, not good.
Definitely not good. So I'm riding on rim. And I'm like, I can't drive these 7 miles on interstate on three tires and a rim to get to work. So I park it. I call my boss. I'm going to be late. Girlfriend who works here with me, Mandy, she picks me up, brings me into work. We're working with one car. And so I've still yet to change the tire on this car. And I'll deal with that later today. But it got worse from there because I get to, well, actually, I forgot my pass to get to the Fargo Dome, which was back in Moorhead where I live. So I'm here in Fargo. I have to go back to Moorhead by 1 o'clock. I'm done here. I get to Moorhead by about 1:15. I'm at the Dome by about 1:30. I'm set up at about 1:45. And my charger doesn't work for my computer. It is completely just, it's crapped out of me. Because at some point, the charger just decided today was the day that it was going to do this.
Sure.
And so I'm sitting there going, "What? Where am I supposed to get a charger from?" Because I'm doing a live blog, and I'm blogging from there, and I'm doing a little post, and I'm doing a bunch of stuff for the internet.
You're very important.
Yeah. Well, yeah. At least I like to think so.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, where's the place I can go? I call CVS, which is right across the road from the Fargo Dome. They're like, we got nothing for you. So my best places are Best Buy or Walmart or something. So I run from the Fargo Dome to Best Buy on 13th Avenue, get what I need, come back. Back to the Fargo Dome. I do all of this in a half an hour. I'm set up. I'm ready to go before the tunnel walk. So I made it in perfect time, and it all worked out. And then, again, NDSU ended up winning the game. But I was convinced after my morning that NDSU was not going to win the game. Yeah. I was just like, yeah, this is going to get over. So we'll get to that. That was my morning.
The moral of the story, don't ever ride in a car with Gunderson.
No, never.
No.
No, take a camel.
Yeah.
Take something else. take something else besides driving with me. My girlfriend always gets upset when I drive. I love to drive, and she goes, I hate when you drive because you don't. She thinks I'm a horrible driver.
Are you a horrible driver?
I've been better.
You've been better?
I think there's better drivers out there, okay. Yes. I don't know if I'm the worst driver, but I think there's better drivers out there. So, well, before we get to the NDSU-UNI game and the Missouri Valley and FCS, we have to full disclosure. This is an early recording of
it
the
is.
Podcast. So NFL discussion will be light since no games have been played yet outside of the Thursday night game, which we can talk about, the Cleveland Browns. Wow. But
my Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, your Cleveland Browns. Mr. Peter King's going around and he thinks the Browns are going to be good. And then they're what, 3-2 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've won three
straight. First place.
Yeah,
Cleveland
in the AFC North. We'll talk about that. Want to get to a comment from a listener. And this is Marcus Hagnis, a dedicated listener of the podcast show. He goes, we'll talk about Christian Ponder. Last week we talked about Ponder being an average quarterback and winning a Super Bowl and that whole conversation. And he said, since I know you love stats, Pinto, here are some Ponder-related stats for you. Of the quarterbacks that started the last 16 games last year, Christian Ponder was the only one to throw for less than 3,000 yards. He threw for 2,935. 24 quarterbacks threw for 3,000-plus yards, and 11 threw for 4,000. Take that back to 2012, and the number was 17 quarterbacks throwing for 3,000 yards and 4 with 4,000, 2002, I should say, including Kerry Collins. And then he talks about the draft. The Vikings drafted Ponder 12th. They passed on Dalton and Kaepernick. And so he's essentially saying that the Vikings screwed up in the draft, that Ponder is a bad quarterback. He was the only quarterback last year to start all 16 games and not throw for 3,000 yards. And he points out to combinations of coaches and quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls. And he says there's something to be said for the relationship. Flacco, Harbaugh, Manning, Coughlin, Rodgers, McCarthy, Breeze, Peyton, Roethlisberger, Tomlin. I think those are the last five Super Bowl winners. And, I mean, that's up for debate,
whatever.
Really.
Yeah, the relationship is good between a quarterback and coach when you win.
Yes. You know.
Of course the relationship's
going to be
good. So
that's up for debate. Let's shelf this. Marcus, yep. Thank you for the comment, but let's shelf this. We'll talk about that because we do get into a little Ponder conversation later. So without it, let's get into this. Let's start out with
local.
And we have to start talking NDSU, University of Northern Iowa, the 24-23 barn burner, Pier 6 brawl, Missouri Valley de facto championship game, in my mind, between the Panthers and the Bison. NDSU wins 24-23. Brad, how much did you doubt NDSU going into that fourth quarter down 13?
A lot. I mean, the offense hadn't shown signs of real. They'd run the ball a little bit, but Jensen was bad. I mean, Jensen was just playing bad up until the pass that he threw to Kerry Woods in the end zone. And it's incredible how he can miss so many easy throws. And that one, he had to throw through a hula hoop about 40 yards, maybe even further away, and he dropped it right in. But going into the fourth quarter, I mean, other than the fact that, hey, we've done this before, just with when you're taking a look at the way that they were playing, there wasn't a lot of reason. They hadn't given a lot of reason to have faith. The defense had given up big plays. There were some penalties. It was bad. It was not good football by the Bison.
Yeah, Brock Jensen ended up 13 of 24 for the evening, afternoon. 99 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 sacks. Not unbelievable stats. But the one thing you can say about the offense is Jensen may have been bad. The offense didn't turn it over. There were turnovers that NDSU did, but the offense didn't do it. They held on to the ball. You know, going into that fourth quarter, because that was a question I asked you, and you doubted, and I didn't, just out of the simple fact that NDSU was down 13-10. They had just come back within three, and you and I went out and scored a touchdown, made it 20-10, and then NDSU gets a kickoff return and fumbles the kickoff return, their second of the game. And as I was live blogging on KFGO.com, I made the comment that said, if NDSU gives up a touchdown here, it's over. They need to hold you and I to a field goal. And they did. And that's why I'm thinking, two touchdowns is doable. I mean, you have three, maybe four offensive series left at this point in the game, down 13, very doable. They really cut it as short as possible. I mean, they went down to the fourth quarter wire. But you saw what NDCU did against Kansas State. You've seen what they've done in the fourth quarter to other teams, and I'm going to bring up a stat here later that it's kind of surprising, but they know how to win. I don't think you can underestimate knowing how to win, which seems really silly to say. Well, you mean you know how to win? Don't you just win? But you have to be able to finish games out. You think of a team like South Dakota State. There was times in the last few years that they've had an opportunity to win games and they haven't been able to close it out. Even this week, South Dakota State had an opportunity to beat Southern Illinois at home. Couldn't close them out. Couldn't bury them. We saw NDSU have the same problem with teams as recently as 2009 and 2010. You know, they should have beat Eastern Washington in that game in Washington. Couldn't close them out on that last drive. Eastern Washington scores, go to overtime. You saw a lot of games where they had leads or they were close, couldn't get stops. This team knows how to win. And so going into that fourth quarter for me, I didn't really doubt it that much, down 23-10. Think of this stat, Brad. NDCU came in, hadn't allowed 1 point in the fourth quarter. That still holds true.
Yeah.
5 games, 0 points in the fourth quarter.
I mean, really 2 games. I don't really count Delaware State or...
3 games then.
Oh, three
Kansas
games.
Kansas State.
Including the, well, include 2 games prior, but yeah, yes. 3 games now. Yeah.
But I mean, in 5 games total, they have yet to allow a point in the fourth quarter, which is pretty unbelievable. You need teams that need to go down and close out games, Kansas State being one of them, you and I being another, and South Dakota State with an opportunity to at least get into the game or at least make a statement, score some points. NDSU has been able defensively to shut out teams in the fourth quarter. That is an amazing stat. The other thing, too, that I thought was huge, and I brought it up, was that fumble on the kickoff return the second time. The fact that they held that UNI offense to a field goal.
Yeah.
That was big.
Both times it was big.
You and I were leaving the Fargo Dome, and we were walking by, and you said, boy, I don't know if the better team won. I said, but you got to remember, think of these stats, Brad.
The stat, you know, and that's what I was looking at, and that was what I had posted is I'm not sure if the Bison team were the better team in the game, but I know they scored more points. You know, you look at the numbers, and, I mean, yeah, all the numbers favor NDSU, but part of that's because the Bison gave, you know, Northern Iowa great field position on a number of occasions. I mean, almost the entire first half, the game was played on NDSU's side of the field. They had the ball in their own territory, and Northern Iowa spent most of their time in Bison territory. And it just never felt like NDSU had control of the game. And I think maybe that's what I was more going off of, is that it just at no time did it really feel like NDSU had a grip on the game.
I get the feeling part of it, but I just have to disagree with you, because if you're a better team, you score 6. You score touchdowns and good
That's
field
true.
Position things. I think of stats of third down conversions, time of possessions, even punts. Field position is a huge key in this game. NDSU had 8 punts. 5 of them were inside the 20.
Yeah.
That's impressive. That's a bad starting field position for your team. The kickoff coverage was unbelievable for NDSU for the most part. 2 punts of 50-plus yards, plus a touchback, and 1 fair catch. Ben LeCompte, probably special teams player of the week in the Missouri Valley again. Probably, I mean, after you see those lines, he's averaging, the net yardage per punt was 41 for LeCompte and NDSU. NDSU was 7-19 on first down conversions on third down. Which isn't a great number because they came in completing something like 67%. But when you look at what they did to UNI was 2 of 14 on third down conversions. That's not good. Time of possession was unreal. NDSU held the ball for 37 minutes and 25 seconds. 10 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Did the better team win? I almost want to say yes. Outside of the big 85-yard run by David Johnson, what did UNI do offensively? They, I think, had one sustained drive.
Yeah, but for the first 3 quarters, that was one more sustained drive than the Bison had.
Yeah.
I mean...
No, I see that point. I hear you when you say that, although NDSU did score before the end of the first half with that touchdown to Woods. But, you know, you look at it and you go, boy, NDSU kind of dominated in the stat column. And plus, they were 2 of 3 on fourth down conversions. Did you agree with that fourth down call? I asked Coach Bowl in the press conference. NDSU was up 24-23. They had taken the lead. And with under 3 minutes to go, you and I had the ball, couldn't do anything with it, so they decided that they were going to punt. They still had all three of their timeouts, yep, but I didn't agree with the call at the time.
Oh, really? Oh, I did. With you and I's decision to punt?
But see, I wasn't sure. If I'm the coach, I'm going, I don't know if I'm going to get the ball back with the way our defense is. My middle linebacker is out. Our defense is gassed. They've been out there most of the time. Maybe we need to go for it on fourth down and try to get into a position. The score, let's talk about it. Let's discuss it, because why did you agree with it?
Because I think the risk reward there, if they don't score, because they were in pretty deep in their own territory at that point. So your risk reward, you're risking by going for it. If you give it up there, you're probably, again, if your defense is gassed in that case and you're saying you might not get the ball back, well, if you go for it and miss, which it wasn't a fourth and short. I mean, they had a little distance to go. It just your odds aren't great because of the way the Bison defense was, you know, had kind of come alive a little bit in the fourth there. And if you give it up there, you're almost guaranteeing that the Bison are going to put something on the board.
Yeah.
And that takes the field goal out of your arsenal. And we'd seen their kicker knock in one from 50 on the right hash earlier in the game. So you want to keep your field goal kicker in play. And that's what he did. So he punted it. He put faith in his defense that, you know what, we know that they're going to run the ball. We know they're not going to pass it. So we're going to all commit on the run. We're going to call our timeouts and we're going to get the ball back. And they did. So that one I did agree with when it happened.
And it ended up working out for him too, because, well, NDSU on the first play, Sam Ogieri had a big run up the middle and then almost busted it, couldn't get free of the defender to the outside, stayed in bounds. But then later in that drive, John Crockett on a first down play runs the ball. Instead of going straight forward, runs to the side and goes out of bounds.
Yeah.
Saved you and I a timeout.
And immediately,
out.
Let's bring back Ogieri.
Yes.
Yep.
As good as Crockett was on Saturday, and he was the better of the two running backs for a majority of the game, that was not a smart play. You just go forward, and you don't. At this point, you're not caring about yards because you've already gotten one first down. That's what you're telling your offense. Give me one, maybe two first downs. We'll take care of the rest. You've already gotten the one, and you flip the field. You're back into the UNI field position. You have to make them take their timeouts. He goes out of bounds. UNI saves one. And so it ended up being a 4th-and-1 for NDSU on a drive, and UNI called a timeout, so NDSU's discussing, what do we do here? And I asked Craig Bullabout, he said, well, it was my decision to go for it on 4th-and-1 for a couple reasons. They didn't trust kicking a field goal from that distance.
It would have been a 40, an upper 40s field goal.
And you and I, he said he had seen in tape, very good at blocking kicks.
And Keller's had a couple blocked.
And it just didn't seem like the right move.
I agree.
And I was fine. I think that was option 3. But option 1 for me was, well, why not punt?
Yeah.
Make them go 99 yards. But, you know, again, they only need a field goal.
Yep.
That's the other thing, is that NDSU would take a lead. All you and I need to do is get in the field goal position. For, I think, and I tried to look it up, I couldn't find anything, but this kicker for Sievertson, I think is how his name is pronounced, Tyler Sievertson, was All-Missouri Valley kicker last year. One of them.
Okay.
Second team. He might have been honorable mention. He's a good kicker.
Yep.
That's without a doubt. And so, why not make them go a long distance instead of trying to run and get the first down?
I chimed in on the student station broadcast at that part as well, and that was the option that I had brought up, is, you know, maybe even try to pooch kick it, have Jensen even, you know, run it off to the side and just do what you see that every now and then.
Yeah,
and
but if you're NDSU, I mean, Jensen does everything, but if you're in that situation, if you're going to punt, you're going to punt. NDSU doesn't do that stuff.
And I think they were just, honestly, I think they were just too close. Had they been back 5 more yards even, I think they probably kick it. But, you know, you're the most likely outcome of that is that it's going to be a touchback.
Yeah.
When you're kicking from that close.
And they were at the 30.
And they were at the 30 or 31 yard line.
And so,
so you're going to, you know, in most scenarios, you're probably only gaining 10 yards of field position. Whereas, again, it comes back to risk reward.
Right.
The reward, if you get that first down, is the game is over. I agreed, even though they didn't make it, I agreed with the decision to go for it there.
Well, again, it really was kind of pick your poison, and you can go through the odds and figure it out. So, in the end, NDSU goes for it. They don't make it, but they come up with a stand defensively.
Yep.
You know, and they come away with the victory, 24-23. You and I, big blow to them in a couple ways. David Johnson, boy, I want to say it was late in the third quarter,
yep,
maybe mid-third quarter.
Yep.
The you and I had a drive. It was 13-10, and they put a drive together, a very good drive. And David Johnson was dominating the drive. They was, boy, I think NDSU had a penalty at some point, maybe a pass interference of some kind, and kind of helped you and I move along the drive.
There was defensive holding
on the side on C.J. Smith, and then after that, you and I started driving. David Johnson was finding big chunks of yardage in the middle of the defense and really making his name known. And then it was a first and 10, and they passed it. They had motioned Johnson, out into the slot. He came across on a slant route, made the catch wide open, and ran down inside the five, but then came up a little lame. Looked like he was holding his leg, some kind of lower body issue. I wasn't able to see what it was exactly. You and I scores the touchdown, Marcus Williams, which we'll get to his game in a moment. And Johnson doesn't come back for the rest of the game. You didn't see him until the last drive.
Yeah, he
of the
tried
fourth
once
quarter.
Or twice to come out and just couldn't.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah, but it was. He said in the post game that
it was hip.
Yeah.
So whether that's going to be an issue moving forward, that's huge for them offensively. If it is, we'll see. You find out what happens on Monday.
Yeah, and speaking of injuries, Craig Bohl said, and I don't remember. I know you ducked out of the press conference a little bit early, but he said it looked like a MASH unit.
Yeah.
In his locker room right now, because Jeff Kolpak always asks, that's always one of his first questions, is what about injuries? And coach said, man, there's so many, I don't even know where to start. We'll figure it out either today, Sunday, or tomorrow, Monday.
Well, yeah.
He said it's just, and you know, after the last few games, it's been, you know what, we're doing okay. I think we're pretty healthy. And now to have him come out and say it's a MASH unit, oof.
Yeah, oof. There's a lot of guys. Tyler Gimmestad didn't start because he had an MCL issue. Josh Colville didn't start because he was in an accident the night before.
C.J.
Smith had a separated shoulder.
Yep,
separated shoulder during practice, and they weren't even sure if he was going to be able to go, which thank goodness he did because he was the better of the two corners.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sure. Marcus Williams, let's get into it, had a bad game.
It was not good.
There's no doubt about it. You know, I had a friend tell me, he goes, hey, you know, Marcus Williams hasn't looked that good this year. I feel like he's got burnt on a lot of plays. And I said, well, the scheme of the defense doesn't really, I mean, he's going to allow people to go back, and it's a zone defense is what they want to play because it's cover two. There isn't a ton of man-to-man coverage.
Yeah, but I disagree a little bit because he doesn't really allow people to go back. The defense is built.
The defense in a cover two is built to have your zones.
Yes.
It's a zone coverage. So if Marcus Williams lets a guy past him, it's usually with the consideration that he has safety help over the top. That's why you're letting a guy go and you're staying in your zone. Unless it's a blitz and you're calling man-to-man coverage, then Marcus Williams is going to be
They've been
man
playing
up.
A lot of man this year.
And they have
and
been.
Last year.
And they have been. And, you know, for the most part, Marcus has done a good job. He almost, in fact, had a pick against you and I today or last night. There was a point there he on the sidelines almost came up with another interception. But he just did not – there were a couple plays where he didn't look good, and the one in the end zone looked really bad.
He just looked physically overmatched, and he's got to be able to read when to look back at the ball. And typically, I mean, he's got 20 interceptions in his career. Typically, it's been something that he's done okay. He's been able to look back for the ball. But he wasn't a lot of the passes that he got torched on, he wasn't even seeing the ball.
No, he wasn't.
He had no idea it was coming.
No, he didn't. So to me, that means that his one-on-one coverage skills.
But the other thing is, I mean, and again, Marcus is a tremendous athlete and has great, great hands. Dude can't tackle. I mean, not even a little.
He has gotten a lot of ink over the last few years because he's a big play guy. Kickoff returns, interceptions, return for touchdowns. That sometimes can hide the deficiencies. He didn't get a chance to hide the deficiencies last night.
Vereen went right at him.
Yes, he did. And Vereen talked about it in the press game. He said, we noticed that he likes to get physical kind of right up front with his hands. I use that to my advantage, is what he said. You know, I went at him one-on-one. I felt that I could beat him in one-on-one situations. Marcus, for that game, that's not good because it's a high-profile game for the FCS. You're going to have scouts there. And you have an opportunity to kind of make a statement, if you will, if you're Marcus and shut down a pretty good wideout in Vereen Jr. Wasn't able to do it. Vereen didn't go for a ton of yardage. He only went for 67, but, you know, the touchdown to me is one that stands out because it was one-on-one in the end zone. Williams is locked up with him, and Vereen just jumps, and Williams just goes back thinking the ball's going to go through his hands or something, just outplayed there. So, thank goodness C.J. Smith was healthy. He did a good job on his side of the field. Marcus just was, maybe it was an off day. Maybe next week we'll see, you know, him come out, have a couple interceptions, and dominate Missouri State. That's the other thing, too, is Marcus Williams plays in a conference that likes to run the ball.
Yep.
And so, when it comes to throwing a ton, you know, it's usually in situations you know what's going to happen. You know, a team's down 10 or they're down 7 on a last drive. He just didn't look good. And maybe it's an anomaly, but maybe we're finding something out about Williams that he's not that great of covered corner. And maybe he's just a really good athlete that is a ball hawk. But, again, you don't get 20-plus interceptions by being lucky.
Yeah.
We can say that. Yep. So, injury-wise, too, I think that Plankers, the guy who replaced Tyler Gimmestead on the line for NDSU, he hurt his MCL as well. I think it was the left knee. Oh boy, for you and I, Mark Farley, the head coach, his son, ended up breaking his leg. Jake Farley, who ended up with 11 tackles and a sack, broke his leg on the play on the last drive, the scoring drive for NDSU that put him up. And it didn't look pretty from what I heard.
No, I saw it. I DVR'd the game and watched the replay, and it was not fun to watch at all. I mean, it just, yeah, not good.
So from that, I heard, and you saw, the post-game handshake was not friendly. And
no.
Full disclosure, these two don't like each other.
Yep.
And everybody knew that coming in. But the comment that you saw, and you're a expert lip reader.
Yes. And you're an expert in listexia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you see Mark Farley say to Coach Bull?
The edited version, I should say.
Yeah,
you couldn't see what was said right away or what he was referring to, but it was very clear that he said that was BS. I mean, that's plain as day, and we've all seen that on SportsCenter a number of times where somebody has said that. That's exactly what was said, and then he stone-faced just turned the other direction and walked away. I don't know what he was referring to.
Yeah, because as the game went on, there wasn't any cheap shots. This game has been heated before.
Yes.
I think back in, I want to say 09 or 08, Pat Bashaw got thrown into a wall at the Fargo Dome, and then there was punches thrown, and Pat Bashaw ended up getting suspended for a game because he got taken out of bounds really hard and got put into a wall, and he retaliated. And I think it was on, I want to say, you and I sideline.
Okay.
That Bashaw got taken into the, you know, the wall that is the stands, essentially, and he retaliated and threw a punch. Well, the referees and the Missouri Valley itself, they reviewed the tape and said, Pat Bashaw is suspended for one game. You know, NDSU was not a huge fan of that because Bashaw had got, it was a bad season for NDSU. There was a lot of injuries. I think DJ McNorton was playing linebacker at one point that year. They had one good bright spot, and it was Bashaw.
Yep.
The guy had ran for like 1,500 yards
Something like that.
And he gets taken into the wall, and he's just trying to protect himself, a little scared because he's not near his teammates. So he's just going.
But you don't throw a punch. We all know that.
Well, yeah.
You throw a punch, you get suspended. That's pretty universal.
I don't think that was the part that was being argued by NDSU, is the fact that he gets thrown into a wall. Where's the help there? So NDSU from that point felt like it was getting a little picked on, and you and I has the run of the land in the Missouri Valley. They can do what they want. And I'm sure things started from there, and they've just progressed into Farley saying something like that. for...
I wish I knew what it was referring to, because, I mean, the most natural thing, obviously, is, well, the coach's kid broke his leg. So, but the play, I mean, it wasn't like the cheap shot that SDSU put on Levon Perry last year.
Right.
It was a running play. He was getting blocked, and from the other side, there was another UNI defender that was engaged with the Bison lineman, and the Bison lineman pancaked him right into his leg. And it was really unfortunate, and it's just one of those random things. It wasn't a cheap shot. I mean, the lineman wasn't even looking at Farley, and it wasn't even the Bison lineman that hit him. It was his own teammate.
Really weird.
So I don't know what it was referring to.
And it wasn't in the manner of where somebody gets upset at something and they're not, like, you're playing a video game or you're watching your favorite team and you're like, this is BS.
Yeah, no, this
it wasn't
was,
in the fact of this is BS.
This was a very angry, and then he just turned and walked away, and Bull kind of gave him a quick glance as he was walking away, and I mean, that was it. And then the coach didn't appear in the postgame press conference because
he was at the hospital
to be with his son, so we didn't get a chance to hear what his reaction to the game was. But
you know,
it's interesting.
It would be interesting, and there's a really strong possibility, although I have to say, knowing what NDSU and how much they rely on their middle backer and Grant Dolson,
yeah,
and how good Farley has become as the middle backer and now a 3-4 scheme for UNI, how much of a difference that's going to make for them defensively. Plus, it looked to me that UNI lost two defensive backs during the course of the game, a couple starting defensive backs. So they could be, I mean, they're just as beat up as NDSU,
yes,
and they
yes.
may be worse off. Sawyer Kilmorgan, the quarterback for UNI, got to know the turf of the Fargo Dome very personally.
Took some shots.
Holy cow. And it was, you know, for the first half, it was every once in a while he'd get hit. But in that second half, it was every single down.
Emmanuel and Jarek just owned the edges.
Yes, they did. Oh yeah, it was a great show put on by those guys, and it just goes back to the fact that the more we talk about this game, the score, because of the fumbles and because of the one big play by David Johnson, just seemed like UNI had control of the whole thing. But you go back and you think of it, and you think how good the defensive line was for NDSU, and you think of how good the pass rush was,
yeah,
for NDSU, and you think of how good the running game was for NDSU. In the end, they had two guys almost go over 100 yards. You know, I thought Sam Ojeri looked bad for the first three quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, he was starting to find holes. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to the offensive line,
yep,
which was duct taped together, essentially. When you have Gimistick coming on one leg just yep. because he has to, and you're still able to get push again. We can say what we want about this game. It looked like you and I dominated, but the number four team in the nation only held the ball for 23 minutes, and NDSU and a duct tape offensive line dominated the line of scrimmage on both ends. NDSU, the number one team. Now, I it may be a little early. I think it's the de facto Missouri Valley, but let's go into this question. Do you see this as being it for NDSU as far as this is going to be their toughest challenge the rest of the year?
They haven't lost their toughest challenge in the last 2 years. So it's really tough to say that, you know, that this is going to be it, there, that no team is going to be this close to NDSU, because that's what we would have said each of the last 2 years when they lost to Indiana State and Youngstown State. So on paper, yeah. I mean, but the game at Southern Illinois, I think, is going to be, it's going to be tough 2 weeks away.
Southern Illinois, as we get into the Missouri Valley and look around, ended up beating South Dakota State at home. They were
in Brookings.
Pardon me, in Brookings, not Carbondale. And Southern Illinois has this, since Dale Lennon has got there defensively, they've always been a little bit scary. They've always been a team that's able to come up with sacks. I think for the longest time, they're one of the best teams when it comes to tackle for losses. He just does a great job scheming defensively. And then there was a couple years ago, he had some solid running backs as well. He just had the perfect team at Southern Illinois. And now all of a sudden, they've really fallen off the map. You know, UNI was good, and they've continued to be good. Last year was an anomaly. NDSU got to where they needed to be. Southern Illinois at one point went 8-0 in the Valley.
Yep.
And now they've really regressed. But a win like this, and they're doing pretty good, Southern Illinois, a win like that, that's pretty big. Now, did they hold Zach Zenner in check?
Not really.
Kinda.
31 carries for how many?
112 yards, 12? Couple scores. But they were able to run the ball effectively. Agnew had 105 yards, no touchdowns. Faulkner, their quarterback, ended up with a touchdown of his own. Two, actually, both on the ground and then one through the air. Well, two on the ground, one through the air. So he ended up being the majority of the score. How big is that win for Southern Illinois? How big is the loss for South Dakota State? How do you view it, Brad?
I mean, South Dakota State's reeling. All of a sudden, a week ago, they were atop, what, they were number six in the country?
Yeah.
And now they lose twice in, you know, back-to-back weeks on their home field. And that's rough. That's really, really rough. You know, there's a lot of season left, obviously, but they're looking like a more and more limited team.
They were up 17-10 at the half. Ended up having to come back. Well, actually, Southern Illinois came back and scored. I'm looking at this 17 unanswered in the second half. You talk about closing games out. Second half, you got to be able to do that. They weren't. Look at elsewhere around. I'll put in my two cents. I think South Dakota State is now showing how their team is. The defense of this team is not good. They put up a good effort against NDSU last week, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact it's a rivalry. They were at home. That's a big game to get up for. They wanted to prove that they belonged. Their defense showed up against NDSU, and NDSU's offense was really not that good. I mean, they didn't look good against South Dakota State for three quarters. But now we're seeing South Dakota State, they're just not being able to stop people. When you have a lead in the fourth quarter, not fourth quarter, second half, you give up 10 in the third, another touchdown there, 27-17 against a team you should beat. It doesn't look good. I think they're going to have issues as the season goes along. Elsewhere around the Missouri Valley, Illinois State bounced back after losing to Missouri State, and they beat Western Illinois 35-21. Youngstown State over Indiana State, and that game really wasn't close. 35-24 is a score, but 14 points for Indiana State in the second, or in the fourth quarter, I should say. And then South Dakota and Missouri State, the game of bottom feeders. The Bears up 14-6 going into the fourth quarter. South Dakota ends up pulling out the win 17-14. So Missouri State now falls to 1-5 on the year and 1-1 in conference. They were at home against Illinois State, who was ranked when they played, and they dominated Illinois State 37-10. Now, Missouri State, for whatever reason, gives NDSU fits. We've seen two of the last 3 years, they lost to Missouri State 3-0 in a game that NDSU, if they would have won, could have gotten a bye the first time they got into the FCS playoffs. Ended up having to host a first-round game against Robert Morris. But they lost the last game of the year in 3-0 to Missouri State. Last year was, I want to say, like a 20-17 victory for NDSU, or maybe even 17-14. It wasn't a pretty win by the Bison. As I look here, 21-17. Do you see NDSU having the same issues with Missouri State for whatever reason, or do you think it's a, we're going to go out and get it done?
I want to see how banged up they are. I want to see what the severity of the injuries are first. I know that's a cop-out, and I can kind of see you rolling your eyes a little bit. But I mean, it's the kind of game, although one of the big things that'll help is homecoming. I mean, there's going to be a lot of energy and a lot of people. It's going to be, I mean, the dome is going to be packed and rocking with people who've been having a good time for about 24 hours at that point. So I think the Bison should be all right for this one.
Missouri State, 1-5. The last time they played in the dome, NDSU put up something like 55 on them. I don't suspect a letdown, but NDSU, and I felt it in the stands, and I'm going to say this, the student section was lacking.
A little sparse.
On Saturday, for whatever reason.
Yeah, there were. I didn't expect to see any empty seats.
Was there some hunting opener in October?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
It's the only thing I can think of. But, you know, when you're riding a high that this NDSU football program has been for the last 6 weeks, you can only party for so long. You know what I mean? You could only go, boy, every game is a huge game, and everything right now is just the biggest event that we've been through before you finally go, whoa, I need a break. And I'm not saying NDSU, I mean, the crowd was loud. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that for fans and for the team, you finally look at the schedule and go, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Delaware State and Fair State, they are what they are. They're bad teams, and you schedule them as cupcakes. But you think about it, Kansas State you get up for because it's Kansas State, and we have a real possibility of winning. And then you win that game, and it's national recognition, and you're getting headlines, and you're getting featured on ESPN, and you're getting national calls, and you're getting people to say this is the best team in the FCS. They'd probably win the MAC, or they win the WAC, or they win the Mountain West. And then you move on and you come back home. It's the home opener, and it's the raising of the national championship banner, and it's the first time we get to see NDSU this year at home for those who didn't make the trip. And then the next week it's a bye, so everybody gets to break. But then, oh my goodness, ESPN's College Game Day is coming to town, and then it's a huge freakout because it's this event, and it's national television, and it's the NDSU Bison, and it's who cares about Delaware State? We're going to crush them. And then the next week it's South Dakota State, and then it's you and I after that. And you see what I'm saying is that there's a lot of things that have just happened the last 6 weeks for NDSU that you go, whoo, your head starts to spin. Now we get to play, or we, NDSU gets to play a team that's 1-5 that they should throttle. To me, it's your classic trap game.
You're smelling a trap.
Your classic trap game. They've had trouble with them before. I'm not saying they're going to lose, but this is your game where you're going, all right, the offense hasn't looked great outside of the fourth quarter in the last two games. Brock Jensen has been lucky a few times. He looked bad for the first three quarters and really looked bad for a majority of the game.
Yep.
He got picked twice last year. One was returned for a touchdown. I think he actually threw three interceptions last year in this Missouri State game. I think they win, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
Just saying.
Noted. Noted.
It could be a trap game. So I said, I think they win. I think it's something like 35-10.
Okay.
You know, something like that. Like you said, we'll see injuries, but I'll say it's going to be a 3-4 touchdown game, but don't be surprised. Missouri State comes out and makes it a game. So
you roll your eyes at me for hedging.
Well, you went with injuries, which is like you said, well, I don't want to make it a cop out, but here's my cop out.
And then you went in and copped out as well.
I did not cop out. I didn't say it had anything to do with it.
I think they're going
to
win by 3 or 4 touchdowns, but don't be surprised if it's close.
Well, I'm just saying.
You're copping out.
A little bit. let's see. Elsewhere around the FCS top 25, looking around, there wasn't much surprise. The Fordham-Lehigh game. Fordham is a team.
Fordham?
Yes. They
oh
beat.
My gosh.
They beat.
Fordham.
Fordham?
Yes.
All right, well, whatever. They beat.
Do we really care about Fordham-Lehigh?
Well, not so much. Well, Lehigh lost 52-38. More so, Fordham has an FBS victory under their belt. And a decent one at that. What did they beat? Temple?
I don't know. Is John Chaney still coaching their basketball program?
I don't know. They don't have enough towels. Okay. They beat Temple earlier this year. They're 6-0. They're ranked. They're going to be in the top 10 at the end of this. I think that's a significant. That's kind of significant in the fact that you see these. You see these, what, Patriot League teams, which I think is what they are, kind of run up some good scores. And they end up being 11-0 or whatever by the time the playoffs hit. And Lehigh was the same way back in 2011, where people were like, well, their offense is really good. You know, their quarterback's really good. And then NDSU shut them out. I think that there's always room to look at these teams from the Patriot League and go, okay, here's the team
that There's no defense in the league.
Well, there's no defense in the Big Sky. I mean,
okay.
I'm just saying that. What I'm saying is that there's always a team from one of these smaller leagues that you go, okay, they can make some noise in the playoffs. I think they're the team.
Okay.
After looking at that. So that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Georgia Southern lost to Samford 44-34. I'm just looking around the FCS top 25. If there was another top 25, Towson played New Hampshire, which is the one. Boy, Montana State rolled against Northern Arizona 36-7. That's pretty. It's impressive. Eastern Washington. This one, Towson, New Hampshire. New Hampshire, for some reason, is ranked 19th. Towson's a team that's going to be probably the number two team in the nation now come next week when these rankings come out. Towson with a 44-28 win. There's another team that you can look at and go, well, you know, they could be. You got to look forward. NDSU now, I think. It runs.
I just take it one game at a time here.
Oh my goodness, you know, Coach! One game White at a time. Shadow.
We're focused on Missouri State and making sure that we're healthy for that game. And it's homecoming, so it's going to be a big week. So we're really just focused right now on Missouri State. It was a big win against Northern Iowa, but we got to just take it one at a time.
My God, are you still talking?
After you've spent the last 20 minutes that we've been on the podcast, I've been talking for about a minute and a half, and you just dropped that drop on me?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Because you just went coach speak.
Yeah.
Goodness. We're going to move on with you. No, before we get to the regional, I want to bring this up. Valley City State had a wide receiver this past weekend charged. He hasn't been convicted, but he was charged with second-degree murder. He was a wide receiver for Valley City State, and, of course, the name escapes me right now. It's an unfortunate thing. He got kicked off the team, or at least taken away from the team, I should say, the moment it happened. He was arrested on Valley City State's campus. This is the second time this year, Brad, that we've heard of some major incident happening with a football player of a from a college here in the state. But it doesn't receive the same kind of attention from us being the media as NDSU does with nonviolent crimes. Why is that? And I'm thinking specifically of the petition.
Yeah.
Forgery of signatures. Why is that? Why do you think, and we can make it short, because I feel like I know why, and you're probably going to say the same answer, but why do you think that is?
I mean, it's the biggest show in town. There's more people that care about the NDSU football program than Valley City State or other ones, and I'm not saying that something that is right, but that's, it's the way it is, that when more eyeballs are on something, they're going to make something that's less severe seem more severe, and something that's more severe is going to seem less severe, at least maybe in Fargo.
But do you think that for some reason they look at it and go, just because it's Valley City, whatever. But this is NDSU and they're forging petitions, but it's, you know,
I think
Valley
there's
City.
Also how many different writers that look at, you know, you've got one writer that's dedicated just to NDSU. Usually, on a typical NDSU football game, there's what, two or three different writers that have material out? I mean, there's more people that are watching NDSU football, so things are able to get magnified, because when your sports section, that's the biggest show in town and that's what you're talking about, and you're the largest newspaper in the state and you have the largest radio stations in the state, people are just going to focus more on that.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't make it right.
No.
It doesn't. And I'm not excusing what NDSU did, but a lot of people want to talk about, well, NDSU's football program is rampant. I mean, they're out of control. Beck's getting in trouble and he's getting in bar fights, and you've got minors and you've got guys getting DUIs and you've got guys forging petitions, and then you see these other things and go, well, maybe it isn't that bad.
Yeah, that's an interesting, and I don't know that I like looking at it in that way of, oh, maybe it's not so bad.
Well, I think from the fan perspective of it.
Yeah. I mean, the DUIs or the DWIs, those can be, I would say...
I'm not saying these things bad errors.
I gotcha.
But I'm saying that this program, everybody's going to have mistakes.
Yes.
But when you look at the mistakes that have been made out in Minot State and with Valley City State, I think fans need to go a step back and go, okay, this isn't a program that's out of control.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much in control. These are just kids that have made mistakes. Where those situations are going, boy, those are... And how do I put this succinctly? Every error you make is bad, but we, in the media and as fans, want to magnify it because it's NDSU,
yes,
like you said. But again, this isn't a program that's running rampant. And you can look within the state and also out of the state at other programs that have been sanctioned by the NCAA for violations and go, okay, maybe we're okay at NDSU. Things aren't too horrible.
Okay.
I think that's as succinctly as I can put it. Bad situation at Valley City State. They handled it correctly. That's another thing, too, that you have to remember. NDSU really didn't handle the petition situation correctly, in my mind. I think there should have been some actions and there should have been some people stepping forward and saying, yeah, we realize what they did is bad, and there's going to be punishment to pay instead of trying to kind of put it under the rug and saying, well, you know, it's just a petition signing, which I just did by saying, well, at least you're not, you know, these things aren't happening here. They handled it wrong at NDSU. They handled it right at Valley City State. And they handled it right at Minot State. It's just, you know, think about it sometimes when you're trying to take NDSU to the woodshed. Let's move on. Let's go to
regional.
Let's be quick with this since we spent about 50 minutes on NDSU and you and I. Big game, so I'm okay with it. Re-signing of Ron Gardenhire. Gardenhire.
Gardy.
What are your thoughts?
I've been pretty consistent that I thought he should be back, that I liked the consistency that he brings, what he's done, his body of work, if you will, I think has been very strong. I think there's issues more so with the front office than what there is with Gardenhire and with the coaching staff. I mean, there's only so much they can do with the guys that they have, and I think he's done a pretty good job of keeping the guys together. So I'm okay. I like having Gardenhire back because who else are you going to get that's any better?
Do you think the Twins will go out and actually spend money this offseason? That's the other question, because that was asked. They said, are you going to address the deficiencies that you have on the roster?
I mean, what do you mean by go out and get people? They're not going to go out and get Robinson Cano.
No, Robinson Cano is out of the realm of possibilities. I understand that. But what about a starting pitcher like Ervin Santana?
Does Ervin Santana really solve problems, or isn't he just the next Levon Hernandez?
No, I don't know if he solves problems, because I think the problems at pitching for the Twins are much larger than one pitcher. But he's a guy that I look at that the Kansas City Royals went out and got for, I think it was a year or maybe two, but decent money, and he's number two or number one starter for any rotation. A handful of rotations.
Yeah, a not good rotation. If he's your number two starter, you do not have a good rotation.
He's not bad.
He's not good.
Oh, he's good.
No, he's okay. He's probably, if we want to get back into our average talk from last year, he's maybe league average. Maybe. And if you have your league average starter should be, if you're going to have a good rotation, league average should be your fourth starter.
How did he do this year for the Kansas City Royals through 211 innings? Oh, where are your wins and losses, buddy?
I don't care about wins and losses.
Well, what do you care about? What do you want to
I want to know his ERA. I want to know his strikeout to walk ratio and his whip. Those are the three that I really care
about.
Okay,
you're a stat. You're a fantasy stat guy. All right.
No, I mean, I think those numbers matter more. I think they tell a little bit more.
Okay, here you go. He went 9-10, which isn't good, but his ERA was 3.24. It's been in his career.
Okay.
Through 211 innings, like I said. Gave up 76 earned runs. He gives up a lot of homers.
Okay.
But
what's the strikeouts?
Strikeouts were 161.
See, and that's been the knock on the Twins, that they haven't really had a strikeout pitcher, and he's what? That's not really a strikeout pitcher. And you'd be paying for a career year.
Yeah, that's, well, not complete career year. He had a 3.24 ERA, which was best in his career, but here's what he is overall. 4.19 ERA overall. He has 96 wins as a starting pitcher. Most of that, you look at his ERA, most of that was done with a team that really hits offensively, the Angels. You know, guy, most wins he's ever had in a year is 17, but again, he went 17-10 with a 3.92 ERA.
Yeah.
Innings eater, which...
Again, that's Twins, what they said about Levon Hernandez, is that he's an innings eater.
Twins have several of those, it seems like, in the bullpen.
You know, you can go out and spend some of the money on guys. You got to get a team like the Twins has got to get their farm system in order. And really not just the Twins, but anybody. When every team is winning, it's because they got a number of guys who came up through their system. You got the Detroit Tigers, you got Verlander, you got Scherzer. They went out and got Anibal Sanchez, but their top two guys are people that they had. The Cardinals, most of their team, people that they were able to scout and bring up and bring in.
Yeah, but you have to understand the Twins don't have the guys that they can bring up in 2014 pitching-wise right away. They need pitchers that can kind of stem the tide. You know,
to what end, though?
1 year, 2 years. I mean,
to do what in those 1 year and 2 years? That's always what is
to win games.
Okay, Okay.
I suppose it would be, I suppose it'd
Thank
be
you.
The answer.
But I mean, but are you just trying to, what are you trying to build? Are you trying to build something that is going to be sustainable for a little while, or are you trying to claw your way to 500 and stay not really that relevant, but win a few games to make some people happy? What are you trying to do?
I think what you're also trying to do too is prove that you are willing to spend money. Because that's the one thing that
I'm willing to spend money by going
spend
out and
money
spending.
On spend money on name players, on brand name players, which I know sounds stupid because
yes,
you and
it
I
is, because it is.
You and I can say, well, that seems dumb. I don't know why you would want to spend money on a guy that sounds good, but isn't that what people want as fans? They don't want the Kevin Correas and Mike Pelfreys of the world. They want the Matt Garzas and Irvin Santanas. Why? Because they've heard of those guys before.
But there's a reason fans aren't running. And I know you're just providing the argument for that. But there's a reason that fans don't run front offices.
It's true. But they fund front offices for the most part.
Are you going to buy a ticket to go see Irvin Santana pitch?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Come on. You're gonna look and say, I'm not sure if I'm going to a Twins game. Oh, but Irvin Santana's pitching, so I'm going to buy a ticket.
Yeah.
If you're on the fence, you're going to go because of Irvin Santana.
Or Matt Garza.
I think Matt Garza is a step up. I think Irvin Santana is not quite. Ricky Nolasco. Yeah.
What about Tim Lincecum? Guy who hasn't been that good at all for the Giants last few years. Would you spend money on him? And do you think that would put butts in the seats?
Lincecum would.
Yeah, but he's worse than Santana.
But I think, but again, what are you paying for? Are you going to give, are you giving Santana 1 year, $3-4 million or 2 years, $6-7 million? Okay. I'm fine with that. But if you're going to spend 2 years, $15 million, you don't just go start waving $100 bills in the air and throwing them at mediocre players. When you overspend on mediocre players, that's the worst thing that you can do.
Well, frankly, the fact that they spent money on guys like Correa and Pelfrey and traded for Worley and spent money on this is a little bit overspending, if you will.
Okay, so you're advocating for doing the same thing, but hoping for different results.
Yes.
Okay. You realize that that's the definition of insanity, right? It's to do the same thing over and over again, but expect different results.
Well, isn't that what the Twins essentially would be doing if they go after a guy like Irvin Santana or Mac? They're going after these broken down pieces for free agents.
Okay, you're making my point.
But what I'm saying is they've gone after broken down pieces before, but it's all about name recognition for the fans.
And how's that worked? The fans are upset.
They haven't gotten a starting pitcher worth name recognition ever in free agency that I can think of. Fans are desperate to look at something and go, my gosh, we went out and got Tim Lincecum, we went out and got Matt Garza, and we went and got Irvin Santana. Do you know how good they are? No, but I know their names. They don't know Pelfrey or Correa.
And then you know what they do? And then after 10 starts when the guy is 1-6, then they're all, why do we spend money on that bum?
Maybe he doesn't go 1-6. Maybe he goes 6-1. You're talking about in the offseason, fans want results and they want to be, we spent money
but
on
your
something.
Definition of results isn't results. Your definition of results is, we're going to spend money on somebody that I've heard of. That's not a result. That's a feeling. A feeling and a result are two different things. A result is somebody who's going to help you win games.
Well, the fans don't care. They just want to feel like there will be results with the name.
No, fans want to win. They want to win games. If somebody, they will turn on somebody in after three starts if they don't start out well.
They'll feel good during that offseason.
And guess what else they don't really do much in the offseason? Nobody's going to buy season tickets because you got Irvin Santana.
I can agree with that.
Okay?
I can agree with that. They'll buy single game tickets. They won't buy.
But again, single game tickets only last if he pitches well.
It's true.
Yeah.
They have to make some moves. I think in the end, they're going to have to make some kind of moves, and it's going to have to be starting pitching.
They've got to get the guys in the farm system. It's going to be a couple of lean years for the Twins, and that's just the way it is. They had a very solid run during the 2000s. They're going to take a dip here, but they've got to get the young arms in order. You go after the big name and free agent when you're a piece or two away, or you go after a guy like Matt Garza when you're a pitcher or two away from really being able to do something.
Moving on to the Minnesota Vikings. Christian Ponder, does he start next week? Obviously, the Vikings don't play today, which we're recording this on Sunday. Do you see him starting next week?
Okay, so your question is, do I think he will?
Yes, if he's healthy, because that was one thing that head coach Leslie Frazier said, Christian Ponder's our starting quarterback.
If he's healthy, I think they will start him, yes.
How do you feel about that?
I don't think they should. I think they should start Castle, but I think they will start Ponder.
Why?
Because
we know nothing about it from the internal, but
yeah,
why do you think?
We talked about this last week because I think they still believe that Ponder can be the starting quarterback down the road. And if you pull him now for Matt Castle, you're pretty much done with Ponder. I think they should be done with Ponder, and that's why I think they should start Castle to get that process moving.
Now, that's a long... We thought we could talk about it again, but yeah. That just seems so reactionary, which I understand. That's, I mean, the NFL is not for long.
Yes, but it's reactionary, and I think of the two of us, if you're going to try to tell me that I'm the one that's being reactionary, I might crawl across the table here. Because, it's reactionary over the course of a couple of years. And I just don't think that he's got what the Vikings need to be successful in the NFL. And I think, in my opinion, it's time to go in a different direction. I think you start Castle, and you start looking for the next guy.
Do you think the Vikings are now scared, or not scared, but they're worried that they're going to miss on the next big thing quarterback-wise in the draft, because the last few years, draft-wise, they've drafted elsewhere, and yeah, they haven't really concentrated on quarterback position.
And that's because they wanted to get, and I'm okay with that, because they wanted to give Ponder the shot to see if he was the guy.
Well, not even before Ponder, though. I mean, they weren't drafting good quarterbacks, or even looking to draft quarterbacks. They'd go after defensive players or wideouts, offensive linemen, what have you. They missed Marcus Hagnis, who commented on the show, said the Vikings drafted him at number 12. They passed on guys like Andy Dalton and Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah. I mean, Dalton was a second round guy, so everybody passed on Colin Kaepernick.
Which I will say to this day, nobody heard me 2 years ago when they were doing this draft, or 3 years ago, but Andy Dalton,
the Red Rifle.
Yeah, when I saw him in college, I'm going, this guy's good. Somebody needs to take a shot on him. And I personally thought the Vikings should have.
Yeah.
Andy Dalton was the guy. Colin Kaepernick was playing for Nevada and looked like a dude in the pistol. You know, you just didn't go, oh, he's going to be a type of
NFL
quarterback.
And who knew that all of a sudden that's where the NFL was going to go?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very quickly, almost overnight.
Yep.
You didn't know that. Andy Dalton, though, when I saw him play in college, not that it matters because nobody cares about what I think, I was going, this guy's a good quarterback. But they went after Christian Ponder. But that brings me back to the point, do they get worried because they've missed on quarterbacks? And this quarterback class coming out, Murray from Georgia, McCarron from Alabama, and Taj Boyd, and Teddy Bridgewater, and I'm sure there's another guy out there that pro scouts are salivating over. Do you think that the Vikings are scared going, oh boy, we have this guy, he's only in our third year, but it really doesn't look good for us, and there's a possibility that the draft could have a guy that we could get at this position, and we really need a quarterback, and we're going to start this whole process over again. Do you think they're getting worried because all these other teams are drafting well?
I think that discussion should be going through their heads, yes. That we need to, it's 3 years, it doesn't look like it's going well, we need to take a look at this position.
Okay,
I believe that's where they should be going. I'm not convinced that they're down that path yet.
Because that would mean to me that if you're already thinking that, you're already going, well, the best chance to win right now is with Castle.
Yes.
And it's no longer a choice. We need to win now. I mean, Ponder is out, and we're going to move on from him. Why even consider starting him?
Because, again, there's nothing that I've heard up to this point that says we're ready to bail on Ponder yet.
Not that Castle was...
he's not outstanding.
Better.
I mean,
he wasn't immensely better.
There's a reason that the Chiefs cut him.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason that he was available for basically nothing.
Right. I think the attitude of the players looked better with him under center, and they kind of played accordingly. Let's address this question. Marcus Hegness again brought this up, one of our listeners, saying the relationship, there's something to do with the relationship between quarterback and coach. Do you buy that?
Not really.
I don't buy it either.
Yeah. The relationship between a head coach and a quarterback is great when the team is winning. And if they're losing, it's, oh, there might be cracks. Are there cracks in the between this relationship? I mean, I think there's a few out there that are different than others, and I think probably Breeze and Peyton might be one of them.
I think that's noticeable now.
Yeah.
I didn't think that a head coach in the NFL made that big a difference until you see what the Saints have been doing now.
I think that one might be a little bit different than others, but for the most part, nah, I don't really buy that.
Yeah, Eli Manning, Tom Coughlin. I think their Super Bowls had more to do with A, luck, and B, they just had some good defenses with the Giants. Their front four was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, again, defense there, I have to say that. I think Aaron Rodgers is just, it doesn't matter who the head coach is.
Yes.
You know, he's going to win no matter what. And then Flacco, Harbaugh, again, defense there to me more so. And then Flacco just getting the hot hand towards the end of the year. You know, the quarterback-coach relationship, I think there's something to be said for it. But you have to remember, the head coach, his job depends on winning.
Yep.
He doesn't care who the quarterback is, essentially, if you want to break it down.
Unless you're Greg Schiano and Josh Freeman. But
right.
They're both going to be gone from Tampa before long anyway.
Yeah, Schiano wants anybody but Freeman. But again, it comes down to you need to win, you want to win. What quarterback can do that for me? Alex Smith and Harbaugh. You know, Alex Smith was winning.
Mm-hmm.
Kaepernick was a better quarterback. Harbaugh's not going to go, well, you know, Smith and I have this relationship. We get dinner every Thursday night,
exactly.
And we're really good friends, and so I really want him to succeed. It's, buddy, it's my job, and I need to keep it. And this guy's really good, so see ya. So to me, that's kind of an overrated thing of football, is to say, well, what about the court? No, I don't think so. Let's get into national as we get into overtime here. Let's move on to
national.
And NFL, we won't discuss. Top 25 college football. Anything that impressed you last night? Northwestern impress you at all? Or maybe Washington against Stanford? Or did that more solidify you in the top five in major college football is the top five and there's nobody that can crack it?
I mean, I wouldn't quite go that far. I think there's a top one and then several other teams.
You don't even think Oregon's like top two? Like it's Alabama, Oregon, and then everybody else.
I think there's no debate with Alabama, and I think there is debate. You can debate Oregon and Ohio State and a couple other teams.
Clemson?
In there.
Clemson did beat Georgia.
I think there's an argument for that. Yep. But I think it's a clear number one, and then everyone else they're playing for second place.
Yeah, Clemson intrigues me because I want to see Clemson take on another good team later in the season. I like Taj Boyd.
Yep.
I have. Clemson intrigues me. Oregon intrigues me because there's really nobody in the Pac-12 outside of Stanford that could give them fits. And I would just like to see Oregon and Alabama actually play for a national championship, finally. But, after looking last night, Ohio State had to come back, had to have a 20-point fourth quarter against Northwestern. And Northwestern is much better.
Yep.
But they weren't going out there like Alabama and throttling a ranked team. They were struggling with a ranked team.
Yep.
Stanford against Washington. That was a battle. Again, you're not throttling ranked teams. You're beating them. So I think your statement is pretty much correct. We'll see about Oregon. We will, because a lot of people are saying, oh, yeah, clear number two, clear number one. Alabama, you know, you saw what they did against Ole Miss, a ranked team.
Yep.
Dominated them.
Yep. It's Alabama and everybody else now.
And you can beat Alabama. There's no doubt about it.
They can be, but I got to see it to believe it.
Right. It's going to take a pretty good quarterback to beat them. Playoffs, anything that has surprised you in the Major League Baseball playoffs to this point? The NL series are tied at one apiece with the Pirates taking game two, and then the Dodgers took game one, and the Braves took game two. Anything out of that surprised you?
Not so much in the NL, no. I'm a little surprised that Tampa got down so quick in the AL.
Boy, Tampa has not looked good pitching-wise.
Yeah, that's been the biggest surprise to me so far, that they've just not I expected a little more out of a Tampa team. I expected a little more poise out of them.
You know what has been the most entertaining series so far, and it's unfortunate? The Oakland-Detroit series.
Because nobody sees it.
Because nobody's watching it because it's out on the West Coast. But I'm watching the highlights of last night's game, 1-0, and it took a bottom-of-the-ninth single to drive in the winning run for Oakland. The night before, Max Scherzer, which you see a lot of pitchers do well in the regular season, and then they can't do it in the playoffs, absolutely dominates Oakland.
And I mean, Verlander.
Verlander was outstanding.
I kind of said, and when we did our mini preview, I said, you know, Verlander's going to have a vintage Verlander game for Detroit, and he did that, and they lost it.
That game was unbelievable because there were so many big pitches, so many strikeouts, so many clutch, big-time at-bats.
Yeah.
That series has been fun, but A, it's out on the West Coast, and B, it's the A's and the Tigers. I mean, the Tigers are everybody's darling in the AL, but when it comes to national TV and being on ESPN, it's East Coast teams. It's the AL East. It's the NL East. It's not, you know, the AL Central and the AL West, which is unfortunate because this might end up being the best ALDS, NL, or it might be the best divisional series we have. And the Rays, I think you're right, have been the biggest disappointment because I was thinking with their pitching, they may be able to steal something away from the Red Sox.
Or at least be close.
Yeah.
I mean, they just...
David Price got rocked the game before. They got rocked. We'll see how it goes on Monday when they have to play at home and maybe nobody shows up for it.
Maybe a lot of Boston fans will show up.
That's true. The Boston and the East. So the AL playoffs, the NL playoffs, they've been fun. And I'm really glad the Dodgers and Braves. I'm glad the Dodgers stole one from Atlanta because I'm thinking the Dodgers, I have them picked for the World Series. Glad they could steal one from Atlanta in Atlanta. All they need to me with the way Kershaw throws, all they need Clayton Kershaw is to get him game four with a 2-1 series lead and it's over. You won one in Atlanta with him, which is a given. You just need to win two at home. Oh, I love baseball. And when's Lariano throw again? Does he throw tonight?
I haven't looked at the
I think he would
matchups.
Throw tonight, wouldn't he? Let's see. Yeah, he throws tonight.
Okay.
He looked good in the play-in.
Yeah, he did.
He looked really good. I wonder if he can quiet St. Louis. They've got a solid lineup. And the Twins fans, as we kind of go back to the regional talk, but I think Twins fans slightly are pulling for Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Because of Lariano.
And especially Morneau.
Especially Morneau. And I don't even know if he's on the roster, but there's one more guy, and that could be a trivia question. There's one more guy on that team that used to play for the Twins.
Was Punto over there?
No, Punto plays for the Dodgers.
Dodgers, okay. Oof.
I'll let you think about it.
Do you have like Jeopardy music somewhere or something?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Make it up. Just in your head.
Yeah, you know, I got nothing.
Garrett Jones.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Played
for the Twins for a couple years. 1 year major league back in 2007.
Yeah.
But he's been a significant part of this Pirates team since 2010. Not really a good year this year, so I'm not even sure if he actually made the playoff roster. But, again, another Twin. So
good call. Good
Pittsburgh
call.
Has some investment, Twins fans. We're in overtime. We spent a lot of time talking, you and I, NDSU. But I think we had to. I mean, 24-23. Was that one of the best? I'm not going to say the best game you've seen in the Dome because I know the best game I've seen in the Fargo Dome.
There was discussion about on that on Twitter last night. I would say the three that come to mind are this one, Georgia Southern last year, and Sam Houston in 07.
Yes.
I'd say Georgia Southern's got to be.
Georgia Southern because of the situation.
Yep. And the game. But the
game.
Situation
well, I mean, the game
well.
Itself, but that made the situation made the game that way.
I don't know. I'm always going to be biased towards that Sam Houston State game. That was amazing.
You just, when you, as a fan, go into a game and you're like, I want to see a ton of points, and the quarterback, and now his name escapes me.
Rhett Bomar,
who used to be the quarterback at Oklahoma and got caught with a no-show sales job making like $50,000 during the summer to not sell cars. That game was unbelievable. That was Steve Walker at his best.
Yep.
But this game was up there. Going into the fourth quarter down 23-10 and having to come back. One of the better games in the Dome that I've seen. So it was a lot of fun against a ranked team, against a good UNI team. We'll see how NDSU comes out health-wise on Monday. So for Daniel Gunnarsson. Of course, you can follow me at Twitter, at PintoKFGO. You can follow my co-host, Brad Jones.
At The Bison Guy.
Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Check us out on KFGO.com or 740thefan.com. We put this out on Facebook. We love your feedback. We love your comments. We get to them. Marcus Agnes, obviously, he knows. Send us your comments. Send us your reaction, and we'll get it out there. So, again, for Brad Jones, I'm Daniel Gunnarsson, and we'll see you next podcast.